hello everyone. Welcome to Podcast by Dr. Dad. And today we have an incredible school leader, Mr. Adam Drew, who happened to be principal here at Head Start International. It's one of the leading schools of Phuket, Thailand. Sir, tell us something about yourself, your background, you know, your childhood. How did you even choose this profession?
Yes, interesting. I mean, I was very interested in science originally at school. And it was always my goal to become a science teacher. I actually took a slightly different path first. I worked in the chemical industry after I qualified from university, spent a few years working for Big Pharma. And then I decided that wasn't what I wanted to do, and I went back to my original plan of becoming a teacher. So I retrained. And then became a chemistry teacher in the UK. And after a number of years in the UK, decided that I wanted to teach internationally. So moved to Bangkok about 12 years ago, and then down to Phuket about 10 years ago. And I've been in this school now for 10 years.
Oh, wow. That's great, actually. That's great. You know, a lot of time it comes across people's mind, Thailand is a very touristy place. I mean, so much of distractions and everything. With such a free and diverse culture, what are the challenges that you face as a school leader? Because these must not be a regular challenge which a person faces, you know, in other locations around the world. I mean, particularly Thailand is a very diverse and free culture. So what are those challenges that you face?
There's actually a big difference even within Thailand between Bangkok and Phuket. In Bangkok, the school I worked at there, a large proportion of the students were Thai or mixed Thai with a with foreign heritage. In Phuket, the population is far more transient because of the tourist nature of the island. You'll get some students that stay here for a long time. We do have students that will stay for 16 years. Our last graduating class, we had a large number of them that have been with us since preschool. And that's amazing to see that journey from, from being a two-year-old to an 18-year-old. But we do have children that will only be with us for 2 or 3 years, maybe. And so there is a turnover of students. It's not too bad, but that presents its own challenge. If you have a stable school population, it's very different if you have people that come to the island, spend a few years, and then and then disappear again. So I would say that the transient nature of the population of the island is one of the challenges. And throughout the 10 years I've been here, we see different groups of people coming through. At the moment, there is a large Russian population on the island, and so we've seen an increase in the number of Russian students. Typically, maybe that's around about 10%, but at the moment we're probably 15-16%, which may not sound like a big difference, but we have a student population of 1,150 students, so that does make, does make a bit of a difference. I think that's one of the biggest challenges we face. We have a lot of what we would call third culture kids. So children who are not Thai, and they're sort of living in a country that's not a culture of their own. For example, my child, my son Ted is a third culture kid. We're British. Living in Thailand, he wasn't born in England, he was born here in Thailand. And that presents challenges for the children themselves. It's to do with their identity. And if you ask a third culture kid, where are you from? That's not an easy question for them to answer.
That's very complex,
So I think those are some of the challenges you face in an island like Phuket. In terms of the other part of your question, like now, maybe how is Thailand different to other places in the world? Again, it's to do with the Thai culture, which is you know, it is lovely. The Thai culture, the Thai people are lovely. It's very respectful. But you know, getting everyone to buy into that you know, with all these different, you know, we have a Chinese population, a Russian population, lots of people from Europe, and getting everyone to come together mm-hmm. and join in a sort of a common culture, mm-hmm. You know, is another challenge for international schools.
I'm sure.
Which is why we developed our sort of Head Start Learner profile, and we spent about a year talking to all our different stakeholders. What is the Head Start ethos? What is the Head Start culture? Mm-hmm. And so now we have this common core of values that mm-hmm. we're teaching all our children, regardless of their background. This is what we would like a Head Start student to be. Sure. And we've been rolling that out progressively this year, and it's having a big impact.
Actually, I mean, you found a commonality where you can start from. That's great. So you know, what is your take on family involvement in child's education? I mean, I know that it's very important, but what is your take, and how do you encourage such things in the school? And do you?
Yeah, it's actually one of our unique selling points of Head Start. We grew from a homeschool approximately 15 years ago. If you'd visited Head Start at that point, it was in a house, and there was about 23 children.
Oh.
So. And it was my boss, the CEO and the founder of the school, he's still here, and we still have that ethos of a home school.
Okay.
So parent involvement is critical to us. We have parent meetings every Tuesday, different topics every single week.
Okay.
We welcome parents on site until 9:30 in the morning.
Okay.
So school starts at 8, parents are allowed to be on site until 9:30. That's very atypical. Most schools
yes,
do not want the parents on site after the school starts. So we run fitness classes for them, body pump, yoga, Pilates.
Wow.
We're in constant conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage of that is if there is a problem, if they're concerned about something, they talk to us early on. They mm-hmm. see us in the corridors, they come into the office, and they'll tell us what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than something escalating, and you know, it becoming a bigger thing than it really is.
Yeah.
We like to deal with the small issues and hear their concerns and suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that is a unique selling point. Not many schools have as close engagement with the parents as we do. We have regular parent committee meetings. Again, they come up with lots of suggestions. Sometimes they repeat the same suggestion several times, and
mm-hmm.
you get this, again, transient nature of our families. Mean that sometimes they say, oh, well, why do you do it this way? Why don't you do it that way? And sometimes there's very good reasons, but it's not always obvious. But we work very closely with our family. We have multiple times where we bring the parents in to talk about their child's education. It's a really... If you walk around the school, you'll understand fully what I mean by that. You come at the start, the end of the day, you'll see how close our community is, and close with each other as well.
Mm-hmm.
We recently celebrated International Day. We have about 50 nationalities within the school.
Oh, okay.
And it was really just a celebration of everyone's culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone bringing like foods from their own country
yeah.
and things. Everyone getting like, you know, absolutely full. Lots of dancing, lots of performances, but a really, really warm environment to be in. I think... To go back to your question,
mm-hmm.
families being involved in their child's education is absolutely critical, because if you don't get the families on board and the same message isn't being delivered at home
mm-hmm.
And the parents aren't being heard as to what their concerns about their child's education is, then it's not going to be as successful.
It's not going to be, absolutely. I mean, it's a very interesting thing that you said, that you have classes for the parents. I mean, I have never heard of something like that. And that's really intriguing there. That brings us to our next question. And this one is a little... So bullying is a common problem worldwide. I mean, you must have heard about it in different schools happening and everything. Do you experience such issues here? And if yes, how do you deal with it? And if not, then how do you made it like this?
I think any principal that tells you there isn't bullying in their school is either lying or doesn't understand the problem.
Right.
Any school in the world, there is bullying.
Yeah.
I've worked in the UK. I've worked in some tough schools in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens. Now, it doesn't happen as much in our school as it may have happened in some of the schools I've worked with in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason is the culture that we generate here.
Okay.
It is about sort of a caring culture, supportive. Children aren't picked on because they're different. Mm-hmm. They're actually celebrated because they're different. Mm-hmm. However, bullying does happen. We have a large pastoral team. We have deputy heads pastoral, mm-hmm. both primary and secondary. We have year leaders that will deal with pastoral matters. So as soon as we become aware of it, we deal with it, and we deal with it quickly. We involve the parents in it, both mm-hmm. the person who has claimed to be bullied and the child who's been accused of bullying. So we involve both sets of parents, and that goes back to your previous question.
Yes.
The parent involvement is critical. It's not just a case of punishing a child because they've stepped out of line. It's about exploring why are they stepping out of line and what are we going to do about it here and at home. So yes, bullying happens. It mm-hmm. doesn't happen a lot, but when it does happen, we deal with it. We deal with it quickly. We talk to all sort of stakeholders. But on the whole, children sort of feel happy here. Whenever they talk to the inspectors that visit mm-hmm. us every few years, mm-hmm. they always give us sort of a glowing report. Parents in parent surveys will comment positively on it. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some children that have been bullied. Mm-hmm. But again, we support them as much as we possibly can.
The sooner you start solving the issue, the better it is, like your approach. That's true. A lot of school leaders across the world, a lot of parents listen to our podcast.
Right. Right.
So what's your message for every parent who's listening to this podcast? I mean, you are here, you know, actually educating thousands of different country students altogether. So what's like your one common message to?
It's interesting to distill it down to one comment, I think, is very difficult.
Yes, it
there
is.
Are so many messages I can give mm-hmm. to parents. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting now having a young child in the school. I'm looking at things not through the lens of just a teacher. I'm also looking through the lens of a parent. One of the best things to say, I guess, is don't put too much pressure on your children. It's okay to have high expectations, mm-hmm. but you don't want to break your children by pushing them too hard. And you know, let them be children. Let them enjoy growing up. Let them enjoy school. Our motto is inspiring a love of learning. That's what we want. We want children to love learning. We don't want them to learn simply because they've been told they must learn and they must work really hard and they must get the best grades possible. Our children get some of the best grades possible because we inspire them to want to get the best grades possible. Sure. And there is a big difference between just demanding that they get the top grades and actually nurturing them to becoming someone that aspires to that.
So true.
So that would be my biggest message. Let them be children. Let them enjoy their growing up. Let them enjoy school, and find what their passion is.
That is so right. That is so spot on. I think that concludes our today's episode. And thank you so much for giving us time today at your office. And
no problem.
Thank you
very
much. Thank you so much.